belated welcome to our Zazen Kai today. I've chosen for a topic of what I want to offer this morning, the trio of old age, illness, and death. It's impossible, of course, these days not to be aware of those three phenomena, old age, illness, and death. We're surrounded by it in public life and probably in many, if not all, of our own private lives over the past few months or longer. So we have our own personal circumstances, and of course, as loyal subjects of the British monarchy, we're aware of the death of the Queen in the last week. It's impossible not to be. So I offer the following reflections with a sense of unease, as I'm aware of my own failure to practice effectively with them, and I have lots more, for better or worse, to learn about that trio of things. I think I'm just still near the beginning of a journey which is going to continue on. I've lived the first 75 years of my life with remarkably little suffering on account of those three phenomena. I actually remember once in Daesan remarking to Jeff, and thinking of some of the other people in our Sangha, of saying that, gee, I'm so lucky, I really haven't had to death with what A, B, and C, you know, are experiencing or have experienced in their lives. He offered a very interesting comment about my own life, which I completely overlooked. But I remember feeling, wow, you know, well, I'm not proud of that, but it's just there hadn't been much suffering, certainly of the kind that I'm talking about today, old age, illness, and death. But despite my misgivings and awareness of perhaps the sensitivities of other people in our Sangha about these things, I find that I'm unable not to talk about them. There's so much on my mind. It's been such a preoccupation of mine for the last couple of months, probably, if not longer than that. So, of course, old age, illness, and death are very central to Buddhism. And perhaps the origin is the story with which probably everyone has some familiarity, of the Buddha who was raised in the protective environs of the palace grounds, and his dad had earmarked him as a successor and wanted to keep him there and to keep him untainted by the outside world, to make him a better ruler when he passed away himself. But nevertheless, the Buddha got out on some chariot rides, evidently, beyond the gates of the palace, and he encountered a very old person that was leaning on his walking stick, and asked his charioteer, you know, well, what's wrong with this guy, huh? You know, I've never seen anybody walk like that. But similarly with old age and death, he saw a corpse on the ground for the sudden. These are things he had never experienced before, and his charioteer and driver explained to him what those were, and that eventually led, whether this is a true story or not, symbolically, to the Buddha's leaving the palace grounds, striking out on his own to experience the world, and in the long run, to his, well, the trajectory of his life and the formulation of the Four Noble Truths would start out with, you know, there is suffering in the world, and then on the basis of his experience, some suggestions as to how, you know, we might all deal with the kinds of suffering that come along with these three phenomena. We're reminded when we have our own session of the evening message every night, Life and death is a grave matter. All things pass quickly away. That's the way we end every day, actually, of the session, isn't it? Now, I felt in the last couple of months, anyway, I've experienced what seemed like an ever-tightening circle of old age, illness, and death around me in a very self-centered way that I'm touched. I seem to be aware of instances of these three things through my own life and that of my acquaintances and neighbors and friends, and just aware of the passing of people, the illness of others. And of course, part of this is an artifact of my own age, and that's why I'm sure there's a lot more coming. So I will be aware of other 80-year-olds and people of similar age experiencing these phenomena too. And of course, in general, it's hard not to be aware, and it's quite shocking, I think, to be aware of the statistics of illness and death related to COVID, which is actually much worse now than it was at the height, so-called, of the outbreak. And, you know, as a side note, our own callousness or the lack of political will to acknowledge, you know, old age, death, and sickness. And, of course, the sickness and death is very much related to old age because of the skewed statistics for people in retirement and nursing homes. So I'm, at the most personal level, aware of my own health problems and that of my wife, Carol Ann, who's in care, as well as a daily reminder. Her facility actually was in lockdown for the first time since the beginning of the outbreak for 3 weeks or so. And now, thankfully, they're out of it. So both in a communal and in a private way, I feel I've been very impacted by those three phenomena. So what do we do with it? Or what do I try to do? I guess the first obvious thing is that there's nothing special about old age, illness, and death. That's just part of the human, the sentient being. And they are reminders of what are sometimes called the three marks of existence in Buddhism: impermanence, suffering, and non-self or non-static self. All those things relate to those three marks. So we can say that this is a generalized phenomena, and it's quite normal. And yet, on the other hand, it's when we encounter it, it's unique to each and every one of us. There's no contradiction about that. That's both true. And without being Pollyanna-ish about it, they do provide useful, if sometimes overwhelming, opportunities for our own practice. What do we do when we bump into these things, or they bump into us? So we can accept them as natural, and at the same time do everything possible to ameliorate whatever suffering results, or to try to prevent or modify suffering that may occur from them. One thing that I'm aware of is guarding against the responding with what Barry Magic, I think, talks about our secret practice. And no matter how much we spout about how we're just in the moment, he suggests that we come to Zen and Zazen and keep, at least almost at a maybe subconscious level, thinking, I'm doing this to make things better. That's our secret practice. So we say, yeah, I'm just in the moment and accepting. But our secret practice is, I want to get better. That's why I'm sitting. If I sit longer, I'm going to cope more, or whatever it is. So guarding against the secret practice and also freezing an image of ourselves or of other people. She's old, he's ill, I'm old, I've got a medical condition. And like taking a photo, and there's the photo of Tom with his medical condition, and that defines Tom as very, very, of course, pernicious, or anyone else, you know, we know. That image of freezing others and of ourselves is very strong. So those are things that we might try to avoid. Well, I'm not sure about it. We try to avoid them, but at least be conscious when we're doing that, when we're engaged in our secret practice, to make it go away. We're not going to do that. We're not going to make those three things go away, are we? On a more positive note, remembering when we can, at each moment, life as it is, what's happening in this moment, right here, right now. Or I sometimes try to ask myself, what is the practice right here, right now? What is my practice? And as Joko suggests, it's whatever's right in front of us at the moment. So we can acknowledge our feelings. And I was very struck by the one of John Wellwood's terms that we read this morning, that panic. That certainly I experienced that. What if, you know, the catastrophic thing that's going to happen in relating to these. And try to acknowledge that at the moment we have strong feelings about something, but that's not the whole story. What's the practice now? And also, I don't know if it's the human condition, but it's certainly mine, that I tend to become aware of negative thoughts much more than I do of other thoughts. I was talking with Jeff the other day, and he just reminded me of a very simple thing. Sometimes not a bad idea to examine thoughts and emotions just in terms of a tripartite analysis. Unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral. And I've been trying to, I've noticed that actually most of the time my emotional life is pretty neutral, actually. It goes through catastrophe and occasionally. And I often forget when I'm encountering something pleasant, that it's pleasant. It's not a bad idea to say, what's happening right now? You know, I'm out for a walk and, gee, I've never noticed that these plants flowering, you know, whatever it is. Or I love petting dogs as they approach me, for instance. It gives me great pleasure to do that. Now, coincidentally, since I started thinking about this, a non-Zen approach to death was introduced to me last week. I don't think it has anything to do with Buddhism. It seems to be traced to a polymath in the 19th century in America, a guy of many, many talents and skills, who wrote, "Death is only a horizon. A horizon is nothing save the limit of our sight." So if we're down in a valley, what we see, you know, is very, if we're up on top of the mountain, the horizon looks very different. So there might be different ways of dealing with death. And at the same time, I got involved in a very lively online discussion with my classmates, Fieldston School, 1960, about, somebody asked about one of our teachers who was a great favorite of many of us, and who had a very profound influence on two or three of us, because he was a history teacher, and several of us became historians eventually, and could trace our interest to him. So I presume he died, and might have died quite a while ago. We don't know, and we don't, at the moment, somebody is trying to research what happened to him. But if we lift the horizon, people are reminiscing. I couldn't believe that I actually remembered the titles of some of the books that we read. It was so vivid to me. So that part of Edward Perlstein is very much alive in me. And one of my friends who's been a very successful history lecturer too, and just says that it turned his life around, this guy. So the idea of horizons, changing horizons, seems to me a useful, you know, among many other useful ways of looking at some of these phenomena. And I guess to conclude, drawing on the Thich Nhat Hanh Sutra that we read before, the present moment contains past and future. The secret of transformation is in the way we handle this very moment. Transformation takes place in our daily life. To make the work of transformation easy, practice with Asanga.